It is kind of crazy and amazing. This is the 8th episode of The Wendy Edwards Show, and I'm so glad to be able to put this on my website and share it with you. Today, we will review auditions sent in by the next VoiceOver Star finalists for Audiobook Week. And to help me with that, in our studio today is Ann Stevens, a professional storyteller who lives in Louisa and works throughout that area and Charlottesville as well. Also with me is Mary Ann Coffey from the Charlottesville Office of Recording for the Blind and Dyslexic. We've got a great show lined up, including music from Teddy and the Roosevelts. I'm excited. Let's get started. You're listening to Wendy Edwards on the Internet.
I'm Chester Hull from ProSound. We're the caller experience experts. Everybody can relate to calling a company and having a bad experience. We're like interior designers or graphic artists for your phone system, making it relevant, making it interesting, making it fun, making it something that grabs the ear. Call us. Have us do a caller experience evaluation. Delight your callers. Make a difference. Treat them well. They'll be customers for life. Treat them poorly. They'll be someone else's customer tomorrow.
Find out more at www.prosoundusa.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the next VoiceOver Star.
Brought to you by The Wendy Edwards Show and these fine sponsors. ProSound, the caller experience experts. Amoeba Films, the VoiceOver Pavilion, and Gil Zeemer's Advertising Shop. 5 finalists have been selected to compete in the next VoiceOver Star. In just a few more weeks, one of them will have the opportunity to work for ProSound. Remember, it's up to you who gets to be the next VoiceOver Star.
You're listening to Wendy's Podcast on the Charlottesville Podcasting Network and WendyEdwards.com.
Mary Ann Coffey is here to visit with me from the Recording for the Blind and Dyslexic office in Charlottesville. And when I first moved to Charlottesville, I thought that RFB&D was only in Charlottesville. Boy, am I wrong.
That's right. We are a national organization, a nonprofit. We have 20 studios around the country, and we serve over 250,000 members who are not able to access the printed word.
That's amazing to me. Do you know who founded this organization?
Yes, it was founded by Annie McDonald and a group of women connected with a New York library who came up with this idea to provide audio records for men returning from World War II who had lost their sight.
Wow.
So they started out reading to these men so they could use their GI Bill and develop careers and be able to support their families. And then they went to records, and then they went to reel tapes, and then they went to cassettes, and then we went to digital CDs, and now our members can download our audiobooks on their MP3 players or their iPhones.
It is absolutely incredible. And can you tell me the reach that this has had, not just from state to state, but the reach that having books available has had for people who cannot see or who have difficulty reading?
We hear some of the most incredible stories, and they bring me to tears.
Can you share one with me that stands out to you?
One that has recently come to us is a professor of law who lost his vision at 10, just as he was starting to play the violin and play baseball, and had to give up so many things that 10-year-olds are learning to explore.
Do you know what caused his vision loss?
He had a chickenpox. And lost his vision as a side effect of that. And luckily, his mother found Recording for the Blind and Dyslexic and got him our books. And he laughs and says, yes, I used it as a come-on line because I would tell my friends how, well, I could read in the dark. And when he was in law school and walking around with headphones on, one of his colleagues at school said, well, I don't know how you have time to listen to music. We've got all this homework. He said, I'm listening to my homework.
Mm-hmm.
So it became something he was proud of, and RFB&D was able to recognize him for his achievements, and we're very proud of his success. RFB&D has an annual award ceremony every year in Washington, D.C., and they recognize 4 or 5 students who use our books and have had scholastic accomplishment.
Okay.
And there's a young person in Richmond right now who has a scholarship to Yale. We have people with learning disabilities. We have people with vision impairment. And we have members who have physical impairments that preclude them from holding a book.
Like what?
Cerebral palsy.
Okay.
People who've had strokes. We have a... We started to serve returning veterans, and we have a very large veterans initiative again. Many of the young people who are coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan with brain injuries mm-hmm. and with physical impairments and with amputations.
Okay.
They are listening to our books and trying to get their complete their education.
I know a little bit about RFB&D as far as providing textbooks. Is it mainly textbooks that you offer?
Yes, it is, because there are a lot of audio materials out there. You can download lots of other things, but there is not a large commercial market for educational materials. So we plan to be everyone's learning ally. We plan to be everyone's friend in the educational world. We want to be their mentor. We want to provide educational materials. We want to help find diagnoses. We want to help parents of these children. We want to help educators learn to recognize these children and give these people the tools they need. There are lots of people who learn through listening, mm-hmm. and we want to be the platform that delivers that.
Well, if you ask me, you're doing a great job of becoming that, if you haven't already.
Well, we are. We are the largest provider of audio educational materials, and we are expanding. We are in an organizational transformation that we think will expand our reach, bring our services to more people. We are out there at rfbd.org.
Okay.
There are teacher materials on there. Our audio library of hundreds of thousands of titles are on there. There's opportunities for volunteering, for donating, to search for other kinds of accommodation for children and adults.
What do you mean by searching for other kinds of accommodation?
Well, depending on what the learning disability is.
Right.
There is an awful lot of research being done at Johns Hopkins, Rutgers, and other places that, in fact, right here at Kluge, people who work with the autistic, with the dyslexic, with lots of other newly recognized barriers or impairments or barriers to learning.
Okay.
And so we are linking with a lot of those other sources.
Okay. So if you go to the RFB&D site, you can find resources available to perhaps whatever condition or ailment or... It's hard to put a word on this, especially in today's day and age when things are so PC. You know, what do you call these, I guess, barriers?
I think that's probably the broadest term that we have come up with, because there are so many, those of us and those of you who are parents know how you make that click, how you turn that light bulb on in a child's head so that those squiggles on the page have meaning.
Mm-hmm.
It takes different tools, but if you can find the right tool for your child.
A particular approach that works for them.
An approach that works for them. It's got to be very individualized. But we have found that audio textbooks serve a pretty wide continuum. And so we encourage everyone to come to our website, see what we have. Maybe it'll link them to something else. Maybe it'll help with a diagnosis. Maybe it'll be something that a parent can use and can try.
Is there a time you remember that someone was helped with a diagnosis by going through RFB&D? I'm curious to hear the response you've got on that. I think it's important that we take a listen to Teddy and the Roosevelts' first track off of the Genesee EP, 13 Falls, on The Wendy Edwards Show.
Picture of the photograph. They branch and they fade. And the eye of a 35 leads you in a silent car. It leads you when the times are.
Pitney draws from a well of Americana while painting with shades more undefined and foreign. The music is Laurel Canyon. It's the Rust Belt. It's visceral but arranged. Rock and roll but humble. It may be reminiscent of Nick Drake, Paul Simon, or Rick Danko, but these songs are neither yesterday or tomorrow. They are Teddy and the Roosevelts, and we'll hear more from them later on in this podcast. Right now, I'm speaking with Marianne Coffey of Recording for the Blind and Dyslexic, whose website has great resources for any parent who may be concerned that their child could have a reading disability. So, Marianne, say some of the resources on the RFBND website throw up a red flag for a parent. Can they contact you for help with a diagnosis?
We do not diagnose, but we do have links to places that can, and we have some warning signs, some traits that will help a family identify a learning disability, some of the warning signs for young children that you might help a parent catch a child. Because what we found is the younger a person begins to listen and make the connection between what they hear and what is on the printed page, it can almost rewire the brain in some instances, and they can it will help them. We've always known that reading to your child is a good thing to do.
Right.
But your child listening as they follow along can supplement that, and we always encourage parents to, of course, listen to their child, read to their child, watch for these early warning signs that perhaps intervention or early accommodation can keep their child on schedule with their education.
What is the age range for users of RFBND?
We record everything from picture books with a few words, books that don't have page numbers, and we literally hit a chime and we tell the child, turn the page. So they're reading the words. I mean, they're looking at the words. They may not make sense yet.
If they can see.
If they can see. And about 70% of our members now do have vision.
Okay.
And they have some other learning disability that precludes them from or physical impairment.
Okay.
But we tell them, ting, turn the page. And then we tell them the story on the next page, all the way up through the Harry Potter, the vampire stories. We do some what we consider summer reading programs. We want our children to be our members to be mainstreamed. So if other kids are reading Harry Potter, we would get, the publishers gave us Harry Potter before it was released. And it was recorded in our studio in New Jersey. And they had to literally put brown paper up on the window so that nobody could see that this person was reading the new Harry Potter.
Oh,
and the book had to be locked up in the studio, and the volunteers who were reading it had to be sworn to secrecy.
That is so neat.
All the way up, so we record all those things, and all the way up through medical school text, law school text, automotive repair, electricity, plumbing. We do a lot of VOTEC books because so many children who have trouble reading are channeled into perhaps a vocational skill, because these are all very smart people, but they just don't read well.
Right.
But even in the vo-technical fields, you've got to pass a license test. You've got to be able to read plans. You've got to apply for permits. There's a lot of reading still involved, and there aren't the apprentices that there used to be. So these people have to be able to access these books, too. We read nail technology. We read aesthetics. Any book that a person needs to advance their education is something that RFB&D will record for a member.
And do you work specifically with schools in Charlottesville, or is this all separate from public education?
No, no. RFB&D has a grant from the state of Virginia that funds an individual membership for anyone in Virginia.
Okay.
Because
so
we're
not just here in Charlottesville.
Oh, no. It is all over the state of Virginia.
Okay.
And we do work with schools so that schools can provide this service through the school to anybody who needs accommodation. But we really work, we in my studio and in the other studios, we work more at the publishing transcribing level. We really don't work that much with the individuals who need our books, because if I record a book, that book's going to be available around the country, and there may be tens or 20s or hundreds of people who use
listening
that book.
Listening to it, right, from California to Texas. Who
Absolutely.
Knows?
We only record books that have ISBNs and have been published, but our audiobooks are only available to our members. Because we are a nonprofit, there is an amendment to the copyright law that we don't have to pay royalties and we don't need any permissions. But under the copyright law, we can only provide these to people who need accommodation.
Okay.
We cannot make our books available. You can't listen to our books in your car the way you can write.
Yeah. So specific to your readers who... Do they need a prescription for this?
They need a certification, and it can be from a teacher, a medical professional, a reading specialist.
Okay.
Someone needs to certify this person needs accommodation. In fact, we had a man come in. He was a very successful contractor. He had always worked independently, and he had a chance for his dream job. But he was 60 years old, and he was severely dyslexic, and he couldn't read.
Oh,
and he went to have a tutor because he needed to learn certain skills out of books to get this job.
Right.
And she certified that he needed accommodation. So we recorded his books. He got his job, and he came several times with pizza for my volunteers because he was so grateful for what we had done for him. And about, I think he was close to 60 years of age.
Nice. Very kind.
Very nice.
Yeah. That's so sweet. Folks, the training process to become a volunteer at RFB&D is not that difficult. And if you'd like more information on how you can be a volunteer, visit the website for Recording for the Blind and Dyslexic at www.rfbd.org. And you can talk with Marianne, as she is the volunteer coordinator. Keep listening, because later in this podcast, we're going to hear audiobook recordings from our next VoiceOver Star finalists. And you'll get a very good idea of what a volunteer's voice should sound like. Marianne is welcome to stay for the remainder of the podcast. Coming up next, we'll talk with professional storyteller Ann Stevens on WendyEdwards.com and the Charlottesville Podcasting Network.
I'm Steve Dismukes. I write and draw a weekly updating webcomic called Dark Places at darkplacescomic.com. I'm also a freelance illustrator, and Wendy's very good at spotting what other people can do and what they can be and helping them to find that themselves and to bring it out and show it to the world. Wendy's podcast is a great way for her to bring this skill of hers. I think the next voiceover star is a very good example of allowing people who wouldn't necessarily have the opportunity to get their voices heard. It's a really good way to showcase people who do have remarkable talent, might not necessarily be appreciated or recognised in their day-to-day lives. One thing that people should know about Wendy is that she really does care. She's really interested in finding out about people and helping them to flourish. She's very good at finding the good in people and interested in people, which is a really big, really valuable trait. So now I've been doing my webcomic Dark Places for 2 and a bit years now, and it's going very well. She keeps on with the encouragement, keeps on pushing me to step beyond my comfort zones and to fulfill my potential. Others can benefit from listening to Wendy because she's very passionate about helping people follow their dreams. She's happiest when she's helping other people to shine.
You're listening to Wendy's podcast on the Charlottesville Podcasting Network and WendyEdwards.com.
I'm here with storyteller Ann Stevens, who I've known for several years and whose stories I love and my daughter loves very much. And Hopper has listened to Ann's stories and remembered them through time. I think she listened to them back when she was maybe 7 years old, and she's 14 today and can still tell her friends about your wide mouth frog and some other stories that you shared with her.
That's a wonderful story. And thank you. I mean, it's so wonderful to hear that people remember stories. I sometimes think that storytelling is a lost art, that people don't always listen to storytellers and don't always read books as much as they used to.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm touched when people enjoy a story I tell.
When I asked you here to help with reviewing the next voiceover star, I was kind of hoping you'd bring a story with you and share with us. Would you mind doing that?
Well, I can. I mean, I could tell the wide mouth frog, but that's long.
Yeah, let's stick with something a little.
I read
a little
something
shorter.
That I'm in the process of writing.
Is it? Well, does it have an ending or?
No, it doesn't.
Oh, is it going to leave us hanging?
Yes.
Okay, fine.
All right.
So you're going to leave us wanting more?
I don't know.
Okay.
If you're 8 to 10 years old, it's a possibility. So I'm going to hopefully. Guess that you will give me a wink when it's time to stop. How's that?
All right. Well, how about you stop when you're comfortable? That'd be better.
Okay.
Okay.
So this is a story.
You would know a good place when.
Yeah, I might
to leave it.
Yes, I remember doing that in school.
Mm-hmm.
With students. All right. This is called The Genie in the Bottle. Peter held the bottle up to the light. A silver wire wove around its wide base and slender neck, creating a pattern of crescent moons and stars. His eyes narrowed as he tried to see into the dark green glass. He thought he saw a swirling wisp of smoke. That, of course, wasn't possible. Bottles aren't filled with smoke. Soda, ketchup, pickles, lots of things come in bottles, but not smoke. He decided not to remove the stopper. Not here, not now. He'd wait until he got home. He looked at Sarah, his sister. "Look what I found," she shouted, and held her hand up so Peter could see a bright colored bracelet dangling from her wrist. "What you got, Peter?" "Oh, just this," he said without much enthusiasm, holding the bottle by its neck. He didn't want to make a big deal about it. This was his treasure. "Let me see." He knew better than to say no and held out the bottle. "That's neat," Sarah said without reaching for it. Peter never knew what to expect from his sister except the unexpected. On a different day, she might want to hold the bottle, drop the bottle, claim the bottle for her own, or say something like, "That's dumb," or "That's neat," or "Can I have it?" Peter exhaled as he drew the bottle back. "Wait," Sarah said suddenly. Her eyes crinkled as she stared into the bottle. "That looks like smoke," she said, looking up at her brother. "Yes," said Peter quietly, "it does."
Whoa. Now I want to know what the smoke was. How about you, Marianne?
Absolutely. That story really draws one in.
Thank you. You know, my 8-year-old grandson renamed it. He said, no, you need to call it this, from the name I had down, and he was absolutely right.
What was the name of it that you had?
I think it was the genie in the bottle,
okay.
Something like that. He said, no, it needs to be the secret of the genie's bottle. And it was on my computer.
I just got the chills.
It was on my computer. And he said, what's that squiggly red line? And I said, well, that's because something needs to be capitalized. And as we finished the story, he said, don't forget to change that letter. Right?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I think the young man has potential
he's
as a writer.
He's very helpful.
Yeah, he's quite
or maybe
good.
As an editor. We need a lot of those in the world, too.
So. Yes, we need some great editors.
Oh, fantastic. So. Thank you so much for bringing a story.
Thank you for letting me read that little
bit. I could sit all day and listen to Anne tell stories.
This one's fun because this is a book and my others are just short stories, as you know. They're
right.
Usually short stories I can tell in a blink. But this has got a little weight to it. So I'm not even, I know how it ends, but there's some twists and turns to it that I'm still playing with.
Exciting.
Yeah.
Now, Anne, I know you write for a children's audience, but there are stories that appeal to adults as well.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, this one appeals to me, obviously. You don't yet have a website set up. If someone wanted to have you come tell stories.
Mm-hmm. Or a publisher who might like to publish a story.
Yes, or if someone would like to publish a story of yours, how can they get in touch with you?
Could they do that through you?
Possibly.
Through
possibly.
The radio?
Okay, so how about let's say if anybody wants to get in touch with Anne Stevens to do storytelling or to publish any of her stories, contact us at hoppermediahq@gmail.com and I will make sure that we get the information to you.
Thank you. And at some point then I will give you my new email.
Okay.
And they can go ahead and
use that.
Contact me directly.
Sure.
I love to write and it's time for me to write and get published. That's primarily what I enjoy doing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And would you be available for a children's time, say at a library or?
Yes. If someone contacts me, I would love that. I would love to talk to them.
Excellent.
Yeah.
And maybe we should get you thinking about making your own podcast of reading stories.
You know,
story times are great.
You know, a lot of the stories I write, not this one so much, but many of them have a spiritual underpinning. And I'm fairly all denominational, hopefully embracing a lot of traditions.
Mm-hmm.
So even though some of my stories can be told to children, it's like planting a seed in a child, I've often used them in workshops that deal with, I don't want to say personal growth, but perhaps...
holistic approaches.
Holistic approaches and spirituality.
Okay.
So some of these stories are certainly there for an adult audience as well.
Would you be willing to speak at an adult conference or workshop of any kind?
Absolutely. Yeah.
All
I
right.
would do that.
So you heard it here. You can contact me at hoppermediahq@gmail.com and I will be very glad to forward your request to Anne.
Thank you, Wendy.
Thank you.
gonna try to keep it, don't you wanna keep it alive, alive, don't you wanna keep it, don't you wanna keep it
shows coming up Thursday, March 31st. They're playing DC9 in Washington, D.C. On Monday, April 11th, The Camel in Richmond, Virginia. Friday, April 29th, Fridays After 5 in Charlottesville. May 21st, Ashland Coffee and Tea over in Ashland, Virginia. We will hear more from them coming up a little bit later this hour. Right now, it's time to hear auditions for the next voiceover star.
Get ready for a page turner. It's audiobook week. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the next voiceover star.
Brought to you by The Wendy Edwards Show, the following five finalists will move on to compete for the grand prize from ProSound, the caller experience experts.
Contestant 1,
J.D. Dickinson.
Contestant 2,
Brad Larson.
Contestant 3,
Steve Noland.
Contestant 4,
Justin Beck.
Contestant 5,
Jason C.
Who will be the next voiceover star?
Last week, Chester Hull of ProSound and Lana Young from the Hollywood Theater Lab were gracious to lend their ears and help review the next voiceover star for our On Hold Message Week. Our first contestant is J.D. Dickinson. Last week, Lana said she would like to hear J.D. lean on the side of personable. Just talk to a person as if talking to a friend. Chester suggested talking to the mirror or to himself, or have someone in mind to deliver that script to. Ladies and gentlemen, here is J.D. Dickinson's audition for Audiobook Week.
Evolution and the Nature of Science. Science is a particular way of knowing about the world. In science, explanations are restricted to those that can be inferred from confirmable data, the results obtained through observations and experiments that can be substantiated by other scientists. Anything that can be observed or measured is amenable to scientific investigation. Explanations that cannot be based on empirical evidence are not a part of science. The history of life on Earth is a fascinating subject that can be studied through observations made today, and these observations have led to compelling accounts of how organisms have changed over time. The best available evidence suggests that life on Earth began more than 3.5 billion years ago. For more than 2 billion years after that, life was housed in the bodies of many kinds of tiny, single-celled organisms, some of which produce the oxygen that now makes up more than a fifth of the Earth's atmosphere. Less than a billion years ago, much more complex organisms appeared. By about 500 million years ago, evolution had resulted in a wide variety of multicellular animals and plants living in the sea that are the clear ancestors of many of the major types of organisms that continue to live to this day. Somewhat more than 400 million years ago, some marine plants and animals began one of the greatest of all innovations in evolution. They invaded dry land. For our own phylum, the Chordata, this move away from the nurturing sea led to the appearance of amphibians, reptiles, birds, and animals, the latter including, of course, our own species, Homo sapiens. This chapter looks at how science works in the context of our overall understanding of how biological evolution occurred. It begins, however, by discussing another scientific development that challenged long-held understandings and beliefs, the discovery of heliocentrism.
J.D. had a very interesting voice to listen to. I think perhaps he tried a little too hard. His pitch could have been modulated a little bit better. He was trying to convey enthusiasm, but that up and down of the voice became a little distracting, I found.
Okay. So could you give an example of what would be a better read?
I think trying to pitch his voice at one level. You hear, I think women tend to do this even more. They get real and everything goes up and down. And I heard some of that in J.D. He settled down a little bit better later. He did a very good job pronouncing the scientific terms. He tended to rush the ends of his sentences. His pacing would be good, and then all of a sudden,
okay,
his sentence would be over.
Okay.
So I think pitch and pacing could use a little work.
All right. Thank you, Marianne. And how about you? What did you hear of J.D.?
Words ran together. Letters ran together. And what I would have liked to have heard was sentences read in such a way that how do I want to say it? That they didn't run together. And I also found that that modulation, his voice had a tone as if it was almost cracking sometimes, and that also inhibited me from wanting greater clarity with what he was reading. However, what I did like was his attempt to punctuate and pause and to put some enthusiasm into it.
I'm a little afraid that maybe some of the suggestions I had for JD came out in this work. So I apologize, JD, if some of what I said came across, you know, in such a way that it produced too much enthusiasm. At the time when we talked over the phone, JD was concerned that he sounded more condescending and more flat. And so we worked on bringing it up a little bit. And I know it's a fine balance, Marianne, where you want to be enthusiastic, but it's hard to know where that line is if you haven't read for audiobooks before.
That's exactly right. And it matters what you are reading. We have volunteers who are very well intended, and they come in and they want to do voices. My mission is to convey the seriousness and the importance of the text in a textbook. So in that kind of genre, you want to convey importance and seriousness and fascination, perhaps more than enthusiasm.
Right. And it may be my bad because I did tell him to picture how would he read it to his daughter, who's young. However, I did say maybe not as enthusiastic, but picture someone listening who needs to be engaged in the text and not fall asleep while you're listening to science, because I think that's also very easy to do. And any last words for that?
Well, I like the way where there was some enthusiasm, it made me want to hear what else he was saying. But what distracted from it again was this, where the words would run together and the unevenness of the voice in some place.
Okay. So for Anne, the enthusiasm was okay.
Mm-hmm.
It was just the quickness toward the end of the sentences. And for Marianne, the enthusiasm could have come down a little bit.
Yes. I think he could convey science very well and with interest and fascination without trying to be entertaining.
Okay, great.
I think maybe that's the difference. I'm
which is I think we were both aiming for, and I may have maybe, you know, leaned on that a little more than I should have. So, okay. All right, so our next voiceover finalist, Steve Noland. Last week, Lana noticed Steve was a bit announcery. That was her word, not mine. She suggests that Steve should really mean what he's saying when he says it. Chester noticed that each of the sentences seemed like a standalone ad. He said that Steve should make less effort. He said that Steve should make less effort trying to make each word stand out so the entire piece can flow more easily. Here is Steve Noland's audition for Audiobook Week.
Evolution and the Nature of Science. Science is a particular way of knowing about the world. In science, explanations are restricted to those that can be inferred from confirmable data, the results obtained through observations and experiments that can be substantiated by other scientists. Anything that can be observed or measured is amenable to scientific investigation. Explanations that cannot be based on empirical evidence are not a part of science. The history of life on Earth is a fascinating subject that can be studied through observations made today, and these observations have led to compelling accounts of how organisms have changed over time. The best available evidence suggests that life on Earth began more than 3.5 billion years ago. For more than 2 billion years after that, life was housed in the bodies of many kinds of tiny, single-celled organisms, some of which produced the oxygen that now makes up more than a fifth of the Earth's atmosphere. Less than 1 billion years ago, much more complex organisms appeared. By about 0.5 billion years ago, evolution had resulted in a wide variety of multicellular animals and plants living in the sea that are the clear ancestors of many of the major types of organisms that continue to live to this day. Somewhat more than 400 million years ago, some marine plants and animals began one of the greatest of all innovations in evolution. They invaded dry land. For our own phylum, the Chordata, this move away from the nurturing sea led to the appearance of amphibians, reptiles, birds, and mammals, the latter including, of course, our own species, Homo sapiens. This chapter looks at how science works in the context of our overall understanding of how biological evolution occurred. It begins, however, by discussing another scientific development that challenged long-held understandings and beliefs, the discovery of heliocentrism.
And what did you think of Steve Nolan's entry?
I enjoyed the tone of his voice and also his pacing. I felt he wasn't too slow, he wasn't too fast, and there was an evenness to the rhythm that made it easy for me to listen to. He pronounced the words well, and I could have listened to him even more.
Okay.
Yeah?
All right. Marianne?
I concur with that. I thought his was a very easy voice to listen to. I found that he had that interest in the topic that pulled me in without over trying to engage me.
Okay.
So I thought he did a fine job with it, and I thought he was very good in the connotations he delivered, some of his pacing, and they came to dry land. And you could almost see him wink when he said that, I thought.
Yeah, it's more like a sharing thing for me.
It's like making
it's
you
a secret little, like you and I are listening to this and hey, we got it. Kind of like that?
Yes, okay. Making you a partner, making the listener a partner.
I felt there was great ease in his voice. So I could have continued to have listened to him. I'm very sound sensitive and very voice sensitive.
Okay.
So for him, it was just the right pitch.
Excellent.
Yeah.
All right. Let's listen to the next voiceover finalist. Justin Beck's on-hold message left Lana feeling a little flat last week. She said, for the sake of on-hold messaging, Justin can go bigger with his voice and his personality. Chester suggests wearing a smile when you talk into the microphone. And finally, Lana believed that Justin would be a fabulous industrial, technical voiceover artist. Let's see if that shines true for Justin on Audiobook Week. We've got to take a very short break, and we'll be back to hear.
You're listening to Wendy's Podcast on the Charlottesville Podcasting Network and WendyEdwards.com.
I'm Chester Hull from ProSound. We're the caller experience experts. Everybody can relate to calling a company and having a bad experience. We're like interior designers or graphic artists for your phone system, making it relevant, making it interesting, making it fun, making it something that grabs the ear. Call us. Have us do a caller experience evaluation. Delight your callers. Make a difference. Treat them well. They'll be customers for life. Treat them poorly. They'll be someone else's customer tomorrow.
Find out more at www.prosoundusa.com.
Contestant Justin Beck.
Chapter 3, Evolution and the Nature of Science. Science is a particular way of knowing about the world. In science, explanations are restricted to those that can be inferred from confirmable data. The results obtained through observations and experiments that can be substantiated by other scientists. Anything that can be observed or measured is amenable to scientific investigation. Explanations that cannot be based on empirical evidence are not a part of science. The history of life on Earth is a fascinating subject that can be studied through observations made today. And these observations have led to compelling accounts of how organisms have changed over time. The best available evidence suggests that life on Earth began more than 3.5 billion years ago. For more than 2 billion years after that, life was housed in the bodies of many kinds of tiny, single-celled organisms, some of which produced the oxygen that now makes up more than a fifth of the Earth's atmosphere. Less than 1 billion years ago, much more complex organisms appeared. By about 0.5 billion years ago, evolution had resulted in a wide variety of multicellular animals and plants living in the sea that are the clear ancestors of many of the major types of organisms that continue to live to this day. Somewhat more than 400 million years ago, some marine plants and animals began one of the greatest of all innovations in evolution. They invaded dry land. For our own phylum, the Chordata, this move away from the nurturing sea led to the appearance of amphibians, reptiles, birds, and mammals, the latter including, of course, our own species, Homo sapiens. This chapter looks at how science works in the context of our overall understanding of how biological evolution occurred. It begins, however, by discussing another scientific development that challenged long-held understandings and beliefs, the discovery of heliocentrism.
That was the next voiceover finalist, Justin Beck. And I'd like to ask Marianne from the Recording for the Blind and Dyslexic, how did Justin come across to you?
Justin sounds like the kind of person I would like to have in my studio.
Wonderful.
Justin has that straightforward, smooth delivery that we like to have in a textbook.
Excellent.
His pacing was good.
Okay.
His delivery was straightforward, and I found it to be very appropriate for an educational setting.
Well, great. Maybe Justin's found his niche. And how did that come across for you?
I enjoyed his pacing. I enjoyed his ability to his very smooth going. I found it wanted to put me to sleep a little bit.
Did it?
Yes,
it did. A little too soothing, huh?
Very soothing, and I have a soothing voice.
Okay.
So I found that. So it might be difficult for me to listen to him for an extended period, but I really enjoyed the pacing.
So would you say you're also a storyteller? And,
yes.
And you also liked JD's voice, the first voice we heard. You also heard JD's audition, and you liked how he did accentuate certain words, and he had a little more enthusiasm. Do you think, as a storyteller, that maybe you're more inclined to like that?
That's possible. I heard him have a little enthusiasm. There's a kind of energy behind certain words.
Okay.
So he wasn't flat by any means.
Okay.
Yeah, not at all.
All right. Our last finalist, Jason C., had Lana nodding her head last week. Lana said Jason was really close in his delivery of an on-hold message. She said he's got a really good quality to his voice and encouraged Jason to be a bit more believable and make his reading his own. Chester felt he was really close and suggested to back off on the announcerness and don't try to be like another voice talent. He noticed that Jason missed a word, which isn't a huge deal, but it is important to be aware because when you roll through a script, you might drop something important. Here's Jason C. for Audiobook Week on the next VoiceOver Star.
Science is a particular way of knowing about the world. In science, explanations are restricted to those that can be inferred from confirmable data, the results obtained through observations and experiments that can be substantiated by other scientists. Anything that can be observed or measured is amenable to scientific investigation. Explanations that cannot be based on empirical evidence are not a part of science. The history of life on Earth is a fascinating subject that can be studied through observations made today, and these observations have led to compelling accounts of how organisms have changed over time. The best available evidence suggests that life on Earth began more than 3.5 billion years ago. For more than 2 billion years after that, life was housed in the bodies of many kinds of tiny single-celled organisms, some of which produce the oxygen that now makes up more than a fifth of the Earth's atmosphere. Less than 1 billion years ago, much more complex organisms appeared. By about 0.5 billion years ago, evolution had resulted in a wide variety of multicellular animals and plants living in the sea that are the clear ancestors of many of the major types of organisms that continue to live to this day. somewhat more than 400 million years ago, some marine plants and animals began one of the greatest of all innovations in evolution. They invaded dry land. For our own phylum, the Chordata, this move away from the nurturing sea led to the appearance of amphibians, reptiles, birds, and mammals, and the latter including, of course, our own species, Homo sapiens. This chapter looks at how science works in the context of our overall understanding of how biological evolution occurred. It begins, however, by discussing another scientific development that challenged long-held understandings and beliefs, the discovery of heliocentrism.
And I thought he definitely put some enthusiasm in there.
Yeah, he sure did. And there were places where it felt really good and other times where it felt overwhelming. And so that enthusiasm somehow ties in with that pacing a little bit. I felt that I would have liked the pacing to have been more even. So the enthusiasm, there's one line, and I don't remember what it was, but it made me smile. It was good. It was well-placed. But again, other times it felt like it was just overworked a little bit. I hope he gets over his cold soon. The voice, even with that cold, was easy to listen to. Again, I'd want to modulate the enthusiasm and not overdo it.
So just bring it down a little bit.
Bring it down. Yeah.
Marianne?
It was fun to listen to. To me, it was planetarium voice. It was museum voice.
Ooh,
it was.
There may be a call for that.
It is what you listen to when you're walking through the museum or you're sitting in the chair and they turn out the lights in the planetarium and they tell you about the solar system. Great enthusiasm. His building through that story was probably the clearest. The way he talked about the first organisms and how they evolved. I heard that thread of building on the author's words better than I had. It seemed to me he was conveying that transition more appropriately than the others had. But I agree with Anne. For my purposes, it would have been overdone. But I could have sat in a chair in a darkened museum and listened to him.
Yes. It depends on what the voice is being used for. So in this instance, we're looking and we're listening to voices for scientific texts, but in a different venue. They're all great voice. Any of them could read me a story any day.
I agree. And that's why I kept these four as finalists for the next voiceover star. I believe that maybe not every week is going to have an assignment that fits their niche.
Mm-hmm.
But there will be an assignment or two that will fit their niche as we go along in the contest. And so that's why I did different themes for each week so that they could really find what their voice is. As far as this week, who would you pull out and say they have a voice for this?
I think the third voice, for my purposes, when I think of a
that would
an
be
audio,
Justin Beck.
Justin Beck.
Okay.
Or the scientific, the audio textbook, from my perspective, he has the most appropriate delivery.
All right. And for storytelling?
I enjoyed the second voice, second gentleman.
That was Steve Noland?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I enjoyed his voice. And I also enjoyed the third voice.
Which was Justin as well.
Justin
okay.
Beck, yeah.
Excellent. Ladies, thank you so much for coming and helping us out.
I think you have a real horse race here with all four of them, and I enjoyed all four of them. I enjoyed all four of them, and I'd love to have any of them in my studio.
That's about all the time we have for the Wendy Edwards Show this week. Thank you, Marianne Coffey from Recording for the Blind and Dyslexic for coming in. Also, a thanks to professional storyteller Anne Stevens. And a big, big thanks to our next voiceover finalists for continuing week to week to produce the best audio they can. I can't wait for next week. We'll hear their cartoon voices. And I'm looking forward to that. We'll have reviews from professional voiceovers Justin Barrett and Kevin Delaney on the next voiceover star. And we'll hear from Mike Biseglia of OTB Podcast. Now, Mike gave me my start on the Wendy Edwards Show and helped me to learn podcasting. We'll see if he feels he created a monster. Coming up next Tuesday on WendyEdwards.com and the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. As we close this episode, let's hear from Teddy and the Roosevelts one more time. You might recognize this from indie radio. Here's October Fire on the Wendy Edwards Show.
My brother was born on the 23rd day by Michigan skies with a half-purple face, for miles by telephone wire there were fields were covered in hill through October 5. Crisscrossing lakes and Canadian plains, by the Genesee River on a hill in the rain, she laid her youngest to bed with the ghost and a fever that rose and circled his head. Tied it untied. And the vents are holes in the jar, and I can hide by the twig and the leaf, but the days will all be done and they're all will keep. My brother walked into a church by the sea on an island between with roads in between, and those bridges grow beaten worn while the sun becomes his own father when a new child is born. Tied and untied. Back like a spire while the fields around you they burn.